Chapter 18. Meeting at Giganda. Misplaced loyalties. To the last. To the death. Amos. All that last week of travel, he was my primary concern. I kept a watch on him in the infirmary, but he was generally unresponsive. He woke a few hours after the confrontation, and then said nothing. He refused to eat at first, and remained awake, day and night, staring at the locked door of the isolation chamber. I dearly wished I hadn't had to lock it. After a day he took food and drink, but remained silent. We all attempted to get some reaction from him. Both Medea and Maxilla tried for hours at a time. By the time we reached Giganda, a day ahead of schedule, our mood was low. I had never realized before then how central to our team spirit Amos had been. We all missed him. We all hated what had happened. I hated myself for allowing it. Amos had been careless where I should have been able to trust him, but even so, it was my doing. I hated myself. And I hated Jerubbaal, whose baleful influence had been cursing my life for too long. I wondered if I would ever, could ever, be free of it. I made a resolution. If I lived, if I vanquished Glor, I would destroy the Malus Caedicium and then return to Gudrun and destroy Jerubbaal. I would take off my runestaff and annihilate it, just as I had annihilated its kin, Profanity, on Farnes Beta. Giganda's system is dominated by a huge ringed gas giant. In orbit above it is a semi-automated way station established and maintained by a consortium of trade guilds and navigator houses as a stopover and service facility. The SN coasted in. There was no sign of any other vessels. Maxilla made contact with the station master, and a drone tug led us into one of the wide docking gantries that extended from the rim of the dish-shaped station. I crossed via the air gate with Maxilla and Medea, and we were met by the master, a hirsute, sluggish man called O'Keen. He ran the place with a staff of four. It was a 20-month contract, he explained, and then they stood down in favour of a fresh crew. They didn't get many visitors, he told us. They'd be happy to resupply the SN's technical needs for a competitive price, he told us. He told us plenty. Isolation does terrible things to men's minds. We couldn't shut him up. I finally left him with Maxilla. Maxilla could talk too. Medea and I went to the station's central hub to see if the resident astropath had received any messages for us from Gideon. It was a dismal place of rotting and poorly maintained hallways and dark hangars. There was a background smell that I decided was spoiled meat, and Medea maintained was stale lactose. It turned out that, despite O'Keen's non-stop chatter, there was one thing he hadn't told us. Someone was waiting for us in the recreation lounge.
Gregor, Fischig rose to his feet from a threadbare couch.
He was dressed in black with a waist-length shipboard cape of dark red wire-shot fully that was secured at his throat with a small silver inquisitorial crest. I faced him across the room. What are you doing here, Godwin?
Waiting for you, Gregor. Waiting for a chance to make things right.
And how do you propose doing that? He shrugged. It was an open, relaxed, almost apologetic gesture.
I said things I shouldn't have.
Judged you too quickly.
I always was a hard-nosed idiot.
You'd think my years of service with you might have taught me the error.
You'd think, quipped Medea.
I held up a warning finger to silence her.
You made your feelings perfectly clear on Hubris, Fischig.
I'm not sure we can work together any more. There's a mutual lack of trust.
Which I want to do away with, he said.
I'd never heard him so calm or sincere. Godwin, you questioned my purity, branded some of my actions heretical, and then offered to redeem me.
I was drunk for that last part, he said, with a tiny flash of smile.
Yes, you were.
And what are you now?
Here?
Willing?
Reconciled?
Well, I said,
let's start with the here part. How the hell did you know I'd be here? He paused. I looked round slowly at Medea, who was studying the deck.
You told him where I'd be, didn't you?
Didn't you? She snapped round to face me, every bit as haughty and rebellious as her dear, damned father.
All right, I did. Okay? We need Fischig.
Maybe we don't, girl.
Don't girl me, you bastard. He's one of us. One of the band.
He kept sending to the ship.
sending and sending. You wouldn't listen to him. So I replied. Nail told me he'd sent one message.
Yeah,
she said snidely. And Nail told me what you'd sent back.
The big brush off.
To a man who's devoted his life to you. A man who got a bit angry with you and then thought about it and regretted it. Fischig wants to make amends. He wants to be with us again. Haven't you ever regretted anything? More than you can possibly imagine, my dear. But you should have told me.
I asked her not to, Fischig said. I imagined how you'd react. I'm grateful Medea thought so highly of me. Could you not find it in you to trust me again? Trust me like she does?
Quite possibly. But I wanted to do it on my terms, when I was ready. There's too much going on just now.
Oh, come on, implored Medea.
How did you get here? I asked Fischig sharply.
I got passage on a tramp trader. It dropped me off here a week ago.
I'd asked the question so I could test his reply and get a measure of his veracity. As he answered, and I probed delicately out with my mind, I found the last thing I was expecting.
"Why are you psi-shielded?" I asked.
"Just a precaution," he said.
"Against what?" I demanded.
"Against this moment," Fischig said. There was true anguish in his eyes. He drew the compact bolt pistol out from under his cape.
"Fischig!"
Medea howled in horror. Barbarisata was already in my hands, humming.
"Don't be a fool," I said.
"He'd only be a fool if he was doing this alone."
The words were not vocal. They were burning wires of psychic venom wrapped around a monstrous cudgel of mental force that smashed into the back of my skull. I stumbled forward, half blind. Medea fell over hard, totally unconscious. I saw figures emerging from the doorways off the lounge space all around. 5, 6. More. Men dressed in the hooded burgundy armor of an Inquisitor's personal retinue, their chest plates decorated with gold leaf in the form of the Inquisition's crest. Two of them grabbed me and ripped the Force sword from my slack fingers. The others aimed their weapons at me.
"Don't hurt him! Don't hurt him!" Fischig cried.
The guards dragged me round to face an individual emerging from the lounge's greasy kitchenette area. I saw a tall man in black armor and robes, with a monstrous face that had been surgically deformed to inspire fear and loathing. It was equine, snouted, with a mouth full of blunt teeth and dark pools for eyes. Fiber wire and fluid tubes formed gleaming ropes across the back of his skull. He'd once been the pupil and interrogator of my old, long-dead ally Commodus Voke. Now he was an inquisitor in his own right.
"Eisenhorn, how simply vile to see you again,"
said Golesh Constantine Phepos Heldane. The guards dragged Medea and me back on board the SN. I was still dazed. I could hear Fischig begging Heldane to order his men to be more careful with us. Oh, what a mistake Fischig had made. As we were bundled through the station's docking gantries, I saw the sleek black shape of an inquisitorial cruiser now occupying the dock station next to the SN. Heldane's ship. It had probably lain concealed in the atmosphere of the gas giant until the trap was sprung. They took us into the main stateroom. Heldane's men, and I guess there must have been a full detachment, had secured the SN.
"How many travelers with you?"
Heldane snapped at me. I made no answer.
"How many?"
he repeated, following his words with a blade of psi-pain that made me cry out. I needed to concentrate. I needed to rebuild my mental defenses. Feigning injury, I looked around and took stock. Maxilla stood nearby, surrounded by guards, glowering. Elena was sitting bolt upright and pale on a couch. Medea was sprawled on the floor, just waking up. There was no sign of Amos or Kara.
"Four," said Maxilla. "These four. The rest are my crew, servitors all of them, slaved into my ship."
He was playing the part of the innocent shipmaster, outraged at the invasion of his vessel, distancing himself from his troublesome passengers. But I knew he was frightened.
"You're lying, I can tell,"
said Heldane, pacing round Maxilla.
"Your defences are good, I'll grant you that, shipmaster. Don't lie to me."
"I'm not,"
Maxilla began, and then cried out in pain.
"Don't lie to me."
"Leave him alone," Fischig boomed. "He's just the captain. The shipmaster, like you said, he's not part of this."
Haldane looked round at Fischig with a withering stare.
"You made this happen, Chasiner. You came to the Ordos and begged us to save your dear heretical master from damnation. Well, that's what I'm doing. So shut your mouth and let me get on with it. Or would you rather I probe the minds of these delicious young ladies?" "No." "Good. Because the shipmaster is rather interesting. He's not altogether human, is he? Are you, Tobias Maxilla? Your defenses are admirable, but only because your brain isn't entirely organic. You're so much a machine, sir, you hardly deserve the title man, do you?"
"Look who's talking," Maxilla said bravely. I felt the sigh surge from across the room, and it made me wince. Haldane's inhuman features folded into an angry animal roar, and Maxilla stumbled, cried out, and fell to his knees, showers of sparks exploding from burned-out servos in his neck, right shoulder, and right wrist.
"Now you will answer, metal man,"
Haldane leered at Maxilla.
"Or shall I burn out another part of your blasphemous body?"
"There are five," I said loudly. "Five of us."
"Aha! The heretic speaks."
Haldane switched round to face me, his attention drawn from Maxilla, at least for a moment. "The other member of my party is my savant, Amos. I'm sure you remember him. He's in the infirmary."
"How very obliging of you, Gregor,"
Haldane said. I prayed that I had outwitted him. Haldane could undoubtedly feel from our minds that someone was missing. If I showed him Amos, I hoped he would be satisfied and miss Kara entirely. "I would advise you to leave him there."
"Why?"
There was an accident," I said. "He is damaged."
"Warp damaged?"
"No, he will recover."
"But he is infirm because of contact with the warp."
"No." Haldane turned to a couple of his men.
"Go to the infirmary. Locate this man. Kill him and incinerate his remains."
"God, Emperor, no!" I cried. I tried to get up, tried to reach out with my mind to wrest Barbarisata from Haldane's hands. I was too weak, and he was too strong. Another psychic assault smashed me to the floor.
"Is everything all right?" a new voice asked. "There was a lot of unseemly shouting just then."
"Everything's fine, my lord. Welcome aboard,"
I heard Haldane say. I rolled over and saw the newcomer enter the SN stateroom. He was resplendent in his brass power armor, his augmetic jaw as stubbornly set as the last time I had seen him.
"Ozma," I whispered.
"Grandmaster Ozma of the Ordos Helicon, if you don't mind," he said sourly.
He had been elevated. Orsini was dead, and Leonid Ozma had finally achieved the rank he had spent his life chasing. So much had happened in the Helicon subsector since I had become preoccupied with running and staying alive. Ozma, my nemesis, the man who had once tried to have me declared Extremis Diabolus, and who had imprisoned me, tortured and hunted me, had now become the master of the Ordos Helicon and my supreme overlord. The guards dragged me up onto the mezzanine area of the SN stateroom and sat me in one of the chairs facing the long banquet table. They stood back, and Ozma and Haldane approached. Ozma was holding Barbarisata and studying the intricate workings of the blade. His own huge power hammer was anchored to his belt. Haldane sat down facing me.
"There's no love lost between us, Eisenhorn. I won't insult you by pretending there is. Make things easy for all of us. Confess."
"Confess what?"
"Your heresy," said Ozma.
"I am not a heretic, and this is not a tribunal of my peers. I cannot be judged so." I knew damn well I could. Grandmaster or no grandmaster, Ozma could deal with me however the hell he wanted.
"Confess," he said again, sitting down in the seat next to Haldane with a whine of armor servos.
He really was fascinated by Barbarisata, turning it over in his gauntleted hands. "Confess what?"
"We have a list of charges,"
Haldane said, producing a data slate from his cloak.
"Your man Fischig was very specific about his concerns. You have consorted with demons, and conjured one of them as a demon host on more than one occasion. You have hidden prescribed texts from the Inquisition. You have shielded a known heretic from the Inquisition and allowed him to roam free."
I fixed Haldane with a hard stare. "You mean Pontius Glore?" I'll admit nothing, but I'll tell you this much. If you detain me here, you'll pay a much greater price than you can ever imagine. I am sworn to stop Pontius Glaur, and you are preventing me from performing my holy duties.
Your days of performing holy duties are long gone, said Osmer.
Where is the Malus Codicium?
Haldane asked. I toughened my mind shield, hoping against hope that the simple surface truth would not get out. In my pocket. In my damn pocket. Your men searched me for weapons, but they didn't bother about a battered old book in my coat. Haldane didn't read it.
He's still wonderfully resilient, he told Osmer.
They were assuming the Codicium would be in a secure place. A void safe, a strong box, under my damn mattress. They had no idea it would be right there in front of them, covered only by a layer of leather coat. I had to keep that simple, stupid fact from them. Millions will die. Tens of millions, perhaps. If you don't let me finish my work.
That's what they all say, said Osmer.
He rose and leaned over at me, his blunt, grizzled face looming close.
You're going to burn, Eisenhorn. Burn and suffer. I am only Grand Master today because I have never suffered heretics like you. You are the worst kind of fool.
Tell us about the demon host, said Haldane. Where is it secured? How can we find it? What are its command words?
Command words, I replied. Why would you need those? Do you intend to control the demon host yourself? Haldane sat back and glanced at Osmer.
Of course they don't, said Fischig, who had been lurking on the mezzanine steps. They're not heretics like you. They wouldn't.
He looked round at Osmer and Haldane.
You don't want the demon host, do you, masters?
It must be contained and dealt with, said Osmer. Leave this business to your superiors, please. You interrupt too much.
But the demon host, you talk like you want it for yourselves.
Osmer glanced at the long-snouted inquisitor.
Haldane, tell this man to go away. He served his purpose.
Go, Fischig,
Haldane snapped, and my former friend descended the stairs and sat down on one of the couches, gazing at Alina and Medea, who were trying to make Maxilla comfortable.
The demon host,
Haldane rasped.
Give it to us.
And you call me a heretic. Haldane's psychic slap rocked me back in my seat. A guard approached Osmer.
We have searched the infirmary, Lord. There is no one there.
Thank the Emperor, I thought. Kara has freed Amos.
Kara?
Said Haldane, suddenly.
Who is Kara?
No one, I willed.
There is a sixth person aboard,
Haldane told Osmer.
Probably now working with the Savant.
Find them,
Osmer snapped, and half of his guard unit hurried from the stateroom.
Bring more squads across from our ship if you have to.
There was a jolt, followed by a terrible raking squeal of metal on metal from somewhere outside.
What was that?
Haldane demanded. He got up and hurried down the steps towards the entrance to the main bridge. The SN jolted again. Osmer rose and pointed the tip of Barbarisator at me.
Move, he ordered. Watch the rest of them, he told the guard captain.
We followed Haldane onto the bridge. Fischig joined us, along with Maxilla, who was being held upright by a guard. We were listing badly. On the main screen, we could see a forward view of the way station. The SN had disengaged from its moorings and was slowly tearing backwards away from the dock. Docking gantries were grinding and buckling against the ship's hull.
What have you done?
Osmer said to me.
This is none of my doing, I replied.
A series of minor explosions ripped through the control stations on the right-hand side of the huge bridge area, showering the marble floor with sparks and machine part debris. Another blast rocked the starboard chapel annex that contained the astropathic vault and buckled the hatch. A helm servitor combusted and toppled over, smashing open its sculptural golden casing.
Sabotage, said Osmer.
Haldane turned on Maxilla.
Your handiwork.
Mine, said Maxilla. Why the hell would I risk damage to my precious ship just to help these criminals? They mean nothing to me.
You're lying, you metal freak.
Haldane barked and grabbed Maxilla by the throat, lifting him off the ground.
Tell us what you've done. Put it right. Get your crew to stabilize the ship.
I've done nothing,
Maxilla choked. Haldane hurled him across the chamber. The Inquisitor was strong by any standards, but he supplemented his physical strength with telekinesis. Maxilla hit the wall with a terrible splintering impact, and Haldane held him there with his powers for an awful moment, squashing him against the duralloy with his mind. There were several loud cracks of bone and metal. Then he let him go, and the limp, broken body of Tobias Maxilla fell to the marble deck and lay still.
"Why did you do that?"
Fischig cried.
"Shut the hell up, you idiot!"
Haldane answered.
"We need to get this vessel locked down!"
Fischig and one of the guards took a few steps forward towards the main bridge consoles. Fischig knew the SN. He probably thought he could access the thrusters and level us out before the dock gantries did any more damage to the hull. The astropathic vault blew out in a sheet of white flame that atomized two of the helm stations and threw Fischig and the guard off their feet. Screaming and writhing, incandescent with green tongues of fire that washed across its naked, contorting body, a figure levitated out of the burning vault. But it wasn't screaming. It was laughing. It was Cherubael. It was shining so brightly it hurt to behold it, but I could see enough to realize it was wearing the body of one of the SN's astropaths. Plug sockets still decorated its gleaming flesh, some still trailing wires. All clothing had burned away, but the astropath's extensive bionic augmentation was clear. The body had no legs, just a dangling assembly of cables and machined connectors where the astropath, like most of Maxilla's crew, had plugged directly and permanently into a vault socket. Haldane and two of the guards ran towards it, the guards shouting prayers against the warp as they opened fire. Haldane drew a force sword from his waist. I felt the backwash as he assaulted the demon host with the full force of his psychic powers. Ozma was staring at the demon host in astonishment. It suddenly occurred to me that despite his rank and authority, he probably had very little first-hand experience of abominations like Cherubael. "You wanted the demon host, Grandmaster," I said. "Looks like you've got him." My words snapped him into activity, and he looked round, but Barbarisata was already hissing through the air directly into my extended hand. "Heretic!" he screamed. His power hammer swung up in his plated fists, crackling with energy, and he came at me. He had significant advantage. He was psi-shielded and heavily armored against an adversary with no armor whatsoever. Our weapons crashed together. We broke and swung again. There was massive strength behind his blows, and I was still weak from the psychic mauling Haldane had given me. "There's no time for this, you fool!" I yelled. "I didn't unleash the demon host, but I'm the only chance you have to stop it!" Behind us, Cherubael giggled hysterically as it torched the guards firing at it. It skimmed down and locked in combat with the furious Haldane. Ozma was defiant. He would not break off. He deflected my sword stroke with a hammer blow so powerful I was rocked back, my guard open. His follow-through came right at my face, and I threw my body back to evade it. It missed, barely. The hammer's energy scorched my cheek. But I had lost my footing. I crashed over onto the marble deck and rolled sideways as the hammer came down and cracked the stone flags. Ozma's weapon, the Malleus symbol of his Ordo, rushed up again for the death stroke. There was a shriek of energy, and the air above me was split by a blinding turquoise beam. It struck Ozma full in the face and vaporized his head in a splash of light, bone shards, and adipose tissue. His body hit the floor with a metallic crash, and the fused remains of his heavy augmetic jaw bounced away across the deck. I rose. Maxilla, still sprawled and wretchedly twisted where Haldane had dropped him, slowly lowered his hand. The digital ring weapon on his elegantly gloved finger was glowing. I turned back to the fight. Medea and Alina had entered the room along with the remaining guards, looking on in horror. Some of the guards fled. Haldane was being driven back across the bridge by the radiant, cackling demon host. He was throwing everything he had at Cherubael, and the demon was just laughing, teeth backlit into silhouette by the light of the warp streaming out of its gaping maw. Haldane's robes were beginning to smolder. "Alina!" I shouted, and she ran to me. None of the awestruck guards even tried to stop her. "There's no time to do this cleanly. I need you next to me. You may be able to block some of its power." She nodded and grabbed my coat with both hands. She was terrified out of her wits, but she did not falter. I pulled the Malus Codicium from my coat and leafed desperately through the pages. I couldn't find what I was looking for. I damn well couldn't find what I was looking for. The marble deck of the bridge cracked and parted underneath Haldane like solid ground split by an earth tremor. One of his feet slipped into the crack, and he swayed. Cherubael snorted with glee and clapped its hands. The deck quaked, and the crack closed again, like a vice. Haldane screamed. He screamed the terrible howl of the damned. He was pinned into the deck by his crushed leg. Cherubael advanced. Haldane slashed with his sword in terror. The blade melted. The Inquisitor's clothes caught fire. Ablaze from head to foot with green flames, he screamed again. On fire, upright, fixed to the spot, he looked just like a heretic burning at the stake. Cherubael looked away from his prey, bored with it now it was dying. It surged forward and floated towards me. Elena let out a sobbing whimper. "Stay close," I told her.
"Hello, Gregor," said Cherubael.
Its voice was hoarse and impaired. The astropath it inhabited hadn't spoken for many years, and the voice organs had partially atrophied.
"Don't we have fun together, Gregor?"
It went on, its blank eyes fixed on me. It was smiling, but there was nothing warm in those vacant orbs. Nothing at all, in fact, except evil.
"It's always such a delight to play these games with you. But this game must be a bit of a surprise, eh? Didn't expect to see me, did you? It wasn't you that called me this time."
It came closer. I could feel, not heat, but burning cold emanating from it. I was still ripping through the pages of the book to find what I was looking for.
"Here's another surprise for you,"
it added, dropping its voice to a whisper.
"This is the last time we play. I've had enough of the way you make up all the games. You see what I did to that horse-faced idiot? I won't do that to you, old friend. I'll do something that really, really hurts."
It lunged forward, but then backed off slightly, as if stung. It had touched the psychic dead zone around Elena. Cherubael turned his attention down towards her.
"Hello. Aren't you a sweet little thing? What a pretty face. Shame I'm going to ruin it."
Elena sobbed.
"You're a clever old stick, Gregor. Always careful enough to have an untouchable at your side when you meet with me. This isn't the regular one, though, is it? What happened to her?"
I wrenched the book open.
"She won't save you, mind,"
said Cherubael, reaching out with hands that were sprouting thick, ugly talons. I thrust the book up and held it in front of his eyes with both hands, clamping the pages open so that the demon host could clearly see. It was diagrams of the four chief runes of banishment. They wouldn't banish Cherubael because they hadn't been properly invoked, but I was pretty sure just reading them would hurt. Cherubael squealed and tumbled back. I stepped forward a pace, keeping the book raised and open. Racked with agony, the demon host soared back across the bridge, crashed through the main screen, and shattered the hololithic plates in a shower of crystal and sparks. It bounced twice off the ceiling like a maddened hornet fighting a window pane, the color of its flame halo turning yellow and then furnace orange. Cherubael dropped, hit the floor, and burned through it, leaving a circular, smoldering hole.
"Oh, dear Emperor,"
Elena gasped. "Come on," I said. "It won't be long before it comes back for another try. Move!" Medea ran forward. The last few guards were busy beating out the flames swathing Haldane with their capes. He was still screaming. "Get her out of here," I told Medea, pushing Elena towards her. "Hangar deck, go!" They hurried towards the exit. Deep bass detonations from somewhere deep in the SN rocked the floor. Multiple alarms were sounding. Sparks cascaded from the buckled ceiling of the bridge. I went over to Maxilla. His eyes flickered and he looked up at me.
"I didn't mean it," he said in a tiny voice.
"Mean what?"
"I told that brute none of you meant anything to me. But I didn't mean it."
"I know."
"Thank you,"
he said, and died. I ran from the bridge into one of the main longitudinal corridors. Smoke was boiling along it from untold damage below. On the floor I saw weapons and cloaks dropped by Ozma's guards in their panic to leave. I'd taken about a dozen steps when a loud voice told me to halt. Fischig was coming after me, aiming his bolt pistol with a straight, firm arm. He was bloodied and bruised by the explosion that had knocked him down, but there was an utterly determined set to his face. I'd seen that look before, but I'd never been on the receiving end of it. "Stop where you are," he said. "Come on, we have to get clear. The ship is dying." "Stop where you are," he repeated. "Come with me. I'll explain everything, and you'll see why it's vital for us to—" "Shut up," he said. "It's all lies.
It's always been lies. You know you nearly fooled me back then. I was almost convinced I'd made a terrible mistake going to Ozma. But then you showed your true colors. Brought that demon back and proved that everything I feared about you was true. This isn't the time or place, Godwin. I'm leaving now. Come with me if you want. I turned my back on him and walked away. Gregor, please! I kept walking. I was sure he wouldn't shoot. We went back too far. When it came down to it, he wouldn't be able to stop me. The bolt gun roared. The shot exploded my left knee. I cried out and fell, leaning on Barbarisata. There was blood everywhere. I couldn't believe he'd found the will to do it. With a yelp of pain, I hauled myself up on the sword. He fired again, and now my right leg went out from under me, also mangled at the knee. I lay on my back. I could feel the death throes of the SN quaking and thundering through the deck beneath me. Fischig stood over me. "Stop this," I gasped. "Get me to the hangar." He drew back the slide of the bolt pistol. He was shaking with distress, racked by grief and disappointment and duty and belief.
"Please," he said, "renounce it all. Repent your sins and accept the Emperor for the good of your soul. It's not too late."
"You're still trying to save me,"
I managed to get the words out through the pain.
"Glory be, Fischig. You actually shot me so you could try and save my soul." "Renounce the warp," he stammered. "Please, I can save you. You're my friend, and I can still save you from yourself."
"I don't need saving," I said.
He aimed the gun at my head. His finger tightened on the trigger.
"May the Emperor protect you, Gregor Eisenhorn," he said.
He twitched. Once, twice. He swayed. The bolt pistol wandered in his lolling hand and fired harmlessly against the corridor wall. He dropped to his knees and then fell forward onto his face as if he was praying. I struggled to pull myself up so I could lean my back against the wall. My legs were crippled, bloody and useless. Medea crouched down next to me. Tears were streaming down her cheeks. She let go of the needle pistol and let it clatter onto the deck. Kara appeared behind us, a las carbine in her hands, with Elena and Amos at her heels. They all looked in horror at the sight of me and Fischig. Amos was deathly pale and leaning on my runestaff like a penitent pilgrim.
"Help me up,"
I said, from between clenched teeth. Kara and Medea hoisted me up between them. I looked at Amos.
"You summoned Cherubael. It was you, wasn't it? You summoned him into one of the Essen's poor bloody astropaths."
"They were going to burn us as heretics," he said softly. "And then we'd never be able to stop Glor."
"But how did you perform the rituals, Uba? You didn't even have the book anymore."
"That book,"
he sighed.
"That damn book. It's all in here now."
He tapped his wrinkled forehead with a scrawny finger. He'd memorized it. During those weeks of study, he'd memorized the Malus Codicium. Thanks to a meme virus, he was a data addict. That's what made him such a fine savant. And now his addiction had taken him to overdose.
"You memorized the whole thing?"
"Word?"
He swallowed and then finished.
"Perfect."
There was another juddering boom, and a rush of hot air gusted down the corridor.
"Are we going to stand around like ninkers all day, or are we going to get off this ship?"
Kara snapped, bracing against me.
"I think that might be wise,"
I agreed. But the way was blocked. Cherubael had come back for me. Its malicious rampage had crippled the SN. It was still seething with the pain I had inflicted. It wasn't even talking anymore. It surged down the corridor towards us. I couldn't reach the Malus Codicium now. I was having enough trouble just standing up. Elena cried out in terror. I cursed, helpless, useless. Amos hobbled forward and placed himself between us and the charging warp spawn. He braced the runestaff against the floor and lowered the tip towards Cherubael. He knew what to do. May the God Emperor show him mercy. He knew better than I. There was a release of power and light so powerful that it was beyond sound. The host body disintegrated, showering us with a hail of burned flesh, charred bone, and blackened augmetic debris.
Amos and the runestaff shuddered and jerked as they both lit up with corpuscent that crackled and flashed up and down them. The last few electrical arcs sizzled away into the deck. Amos remained standing where he was, with the staff still upraised. A tiny plume of smoke licked off the headpiece. Amos! Amos!
I've dispossessed it for a moment,
Amos said without turning round. His voice was low, and his words were emerging only by huge effort.
So, it's weak and confused, but that won't last. We need a proper host vessel for it to occupy.
He turned to face us. The destruction of the astropath's host body had singed his clothes and knocked his eyeglasses off. What did you do with it? I asked. He didn't answer. The effort would have been too great. Amos would only ever say two more words to me. Amos, what did you do with it? I repeated. He opened his eyes. They were blank. Completely blank. It took us 10 minutes to make the demon host safe. 10 minutes we really didn't have. I was encumbered by the fact I couldn't move unaided. Elena had to hold the Malus Caedicium for me, as I did the work, making the marks and runes and wardings with blood from my own wounds. I recalled the same hasty rituals I had performed on the beach at Mikwal.
Come on,
Kara urged.
There. It's done.
Amos, can you hear me? It's done. His old hands were shaking. He lowered the staff. I could see his mouth trying to form the words, but he couldn't manage it. But I knew this part. The incantation, the litany, the abjuration against evil, the final sealing words. In servitutum, abduco, I bind thee fast forever into this host. Medea nearly burned out the lift jets of Maxilla's bulk pinnace, getting us clear of the hangar deck. Everything shook. It didn't have anything like the kick of the old gun cutter, but she nursed every last ounce of thrust she could out of it. We managed to get about 16 kilometers from the SN when the first of the real spasms shook it. The majestic sprint trader, Isolde Patton, pride of its master, looked like a black shell to us, lit from within by raging atomic fires, spilling trails of debris behind it as it slowly tumbled into the embrace of the gas giant. There was a small, bright flash, and then two more, almost simultaneous, like a flicker. Then a white dot appeared where the SN had been, and grew bigger, and then became a white line that got brighter and longer and closer, until we could see it was the flaming edge of a huge expanding disk of nuclear energy. The pinnace vibrated frantically like a bead rattle in the hand of an excited child as the shockwave seared past and around us. Then it was quiet and still again. And the SN was gone. Amos was crumpled in one of the high-backed acceleration seats in the pinnace's passenger space. His eyes were closed, and his breathing was shallow and ragged. Kara helped me to the seat next to him. She was saying something urgent about improving the tourniquets and field dressings on my legs, but I didn't really hear her. Uber. As if I had disturbed him in his sleep, he opened his eyes. They were his eyes again. Bloodshot, old, blinking to focus without his eyeglasses. His breath sounds were getting worse. You hold on, I said. There's a portable Medicare unit in the cargo section. Elena's trying to get it working. He grunted something and swallowed. What? I said. He surprised me by suddenly taking my blood-stained hand and gripping it tightly. He turned his head slowly and squinted at the demon host we had made together. It sat, strapped into its seat, on the other side of the aisle, head bowed and dormant.
Most, he whispered. Most perturbatory.
I was going to reply, but his grip had slackened. His breathing had stopped. My oldest friend had gone. I sat back, gazing at the cabin roof. The sensations that I had been blocking swept in and overwhelmed me. I felt frail, as if I was made of paper. I knew I had lost a huge quantity of blood. The pain in my legs was like fire, but it was nothing compared to the pain in my heart. I heard Kara calling my name. She called it again. I heard Elena asking me to say something. But the void had come up like a wall. and they were too far away to hear.